and we call him God. Or substitute any dimension of comparison you like, and derive an equally fatuous conclusion.
5. The teleological argument, or argument from design. Things in the world, especially living things, look as though they have been designed. Nothing we know looks designed unless it is designed. Therefore, there must have been a designer, and we call him God.
Aquinas himself used the analogy of an arrow moving towards a target, but a modern heat-seeking anti-aircraft missile would have suited his purpose better. The argument from design is the only one still in regular use today, and it still sounds to many like the ultimate knockdown argument. The young Darwin was impressed by it when, as a Cambridge undergraduate, he read it in William Paley's Natural Theology. Unfortunately for Paley, the mature Darwin blew it out of the water. There has probably never been a more devastating rout of popular belief by clever reasoning than Charles Darwin's destruction of the argument from design. It was so unexpected. Thanks to Darwin, it is no longer true to say that nothing that we know looks designed unless it is designed. Evolution by natural selection produces an excellent simulacrum of design, mounting prodigious heights of complexity and elegance. And among these eminence of pseudo-design are nervous systems, which, among their more modest accomplishments, manifest goal-seeking behaviour that, even in a tiny insect, resembles a sophisticated heat-seeking missile more than a simple arrow on target. I shall return to the argument from design in Chapter 4. The ontological argument and other a priori arguments. Arguments for God's existence fall into two main categories, the a priori and the a posteriori. Thomas Aquinas's 5 are a posteriori arguments, relying upon inspection of the world. The most famous of the a priori arguments, those that rely upon pure armchair ratiocination, is the ontological argument, proposed by St. Anselm of Canterbury in 1078 and restated in different forms by numerous philosophers ever since. An odd aspect of Anselm's argument is that it was originally addressed not to humans but to God himself in the form of a prayer. You'd think that any entity capable of listening to a prayer would need no convincing of his own existence. It is possible to conceive, Anselm said, of a being than which nothing greater can be conceived. Even an atheist can conceive of such a superlative being, though he would deny its existence in the real world. But, goes the argument, a being that doesn't exist in the real world is, by that very fact, less than perfect. Therefore, we have a contradiction, and hey presto, God exists. Let me translate this infantile argument into the appropriate language, which is the language of the playground.
Bet you I can prove God exists.
Bet you can't.
Right then, imagine the most perfect, perfect, perfect thing possible.
Okay, now what?
Now, is that perfect, perfect, perfect thing real? Does it exist?
No, it's only in my mind.
But if it was real, it would be even more perfect, because a really, really perfect thing would have to be better than a silly old imaginary thing. So I've proved that God exists. Na, 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 na. All atheists are fools.
I had my childish wiseacre choose the word fools advisedly. Anselm himself quoted the first verse of Psalm 14. The fool hath said in his heart, there is no God. And he had the cheek to use the name fool, Latin incipiens, for his hypothetical atheist.
Hence, even the fool is convinced that something exists in the understanding, at least, than which nothing greater can be conceived. For when he hears of this, he understands it. And whatever is understood exists in the understanding. And assuredly that, than which nothing greater can be conceived, cannot exist in the understanding alone. For suppose it exists in the understanding alone, then it can be conceived to exist in reality, which is greater.
The very idea that grand conclusions could follow from such logomachist trickery offends me aesthetically, so I must take care to refrain from bandying words like fool. Bertrand Russell, no fool, interestingly said,
it is easier to feel convinced that the ontological argument must be fallacious than it is to find out precisely where the fallacy lies.